Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
We are back, Michael Cohen. It's Thursday, 61 out there. Very nice. This is 1320 WILS. Well, the markets, they've been in record territories here. They pulled back a bit today. My next guest has some thoughts on where we may be heading next, and it's all based on the chart patterns he's looking at. Drosco Coverlia is a former hedge fund manager, current trader, and portfolio manager. He also writes at seeitmarket.com. Drosco Coverlia. Drosco, great to have you here.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
Over 20 years, you've been involved in stocks and the markets, and you've actually been a mentor. You've trained traders to do the work. What does it take to be a good trader nowadays?
I think it's trading is predominantly a kind of an emotional game. I think you have to kind of master the emotions of fear and greed, and this is where most of the traders who kind of make it or not make it kind of are able to do that. Hmm. Or not, if you will.
How long does that take to master fear and greed?
I think it's a lifelong pursuit, if you will. And I think, but also the most important aspect is really kind of risk management. I think all traders who fail, and we know that the failure rate is extremely high, they all fail for one reason, and that's they fail to understand and manage risk, and then the market takes away their money. So it's really very simple there.
Yeah. So do you day trade, or how often are you putting trades and taking them off?
I don't day trade, no. I hold positions, kind of, again, it's all driven by risk management and market conditions, but I would hold positions from less than a day if something goes wrong to, say, several weeks or several months.
Okay, if things are going in the right way. What is that about traders where they get into a position, it goes against them, and they can't get out? How do you explain that?
I think that it goes back to emotions. I think people are very reluctant to kind of cut their losses. And I think once, or at least that they're wrong, I think it just really goes to kind of a personal psychology. And then if a trade goes wrong, they're afraid to admit it. And they start hoping and praying and hoping and praying. And then by the time they're kind of, ready or forced to kind of cut loose, it's already kind of too late and they've lost a lot more money than they should have.
Yeah. How long did it take you then to, would you say, master trading yourself?
It took me probably a good 5 or 6 years, and I definitely would not call myself a master. There are traders out there who are a lot better than I am, and I can only aspire to be as good as these guys are someday.
Really? Is it really just that emotional part, or are they somehow getting information that's more accurate, or is that part of it, or not really?
I don't think information kind of plays as much of a role nowadays with the internet and the availability of kind of so many information sources. I would say the opposite is true, where a lot of traders suffer from information overload.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to focus and ignore the noise becomes extremely critical. And that's another thing that a lot of kind of the newer traders struggle with.
Okay. I need to ask you about the computer trading. Has that changed the game for you, all these fast-paced computers in the markets now?
I think they probably impact day traders a lot more. I mean, people who are trying to make money on 2-3 cents.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're a longer term trader who trades, you know, for days or weeks or months or even years, I don't think they see any impact kind of on their P&L or their results.
Gotcha. One last thing in the general questions, I've heard with traders, especially those that make it, that they blow up their account. They destroy at least one account where they wipe their money out. Is that part of the process?
Absolutely. And I think there's a saying that says, you know, you have to pay tuition to the markets. So that's essentially you kind of getting your PhD in kind of school of trading. And, you know, no school is free, as we're all aware.
Okay. For someone who dreams of trading, how much money does it take? What's the tuition rate usually?
It really kind of comes down to kind of personal psychology.
Uh-huh.
I think you have guys who are by nature risk averse, and that's me. I in the world of trading, call myself the biggest chicken. And if there's a sign of something going wrong, I will kind of shoot first and ask questions later. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you probably have guys who are comfortable kind of really kind of rolling the dice, if you will, and throwing tens of thousands of dollars at the market and kind of trying to learn the craft that way.
Yeah, sure. So it sounds like if you're starting, you should start small, though. That's probably a smart idea.
What I tell people is do not trade with real money. until you're really comfortable. So I tell them to learn, to read books, to take courses, and then do what's called simulator paper trading. And then only after that would I say start with the real money, and then to your point, Michael, start slow and start small.
I'm talking to Drasko Kovarlia. He's a former hedge fund manager, now a current trader, portfolio manager. Now, in seeitmarket.com, you write about the chart, the S&P chart specifically, and what may be a pattern that shows a sign of future bearishness. But you write there that technical analysis of stocks and other financial markets is admittedly a fuzzy craft. Do you rely mostly on technical analysis yourself then?
Yes, I do. I do rely kind of on a blend of kind of fundamental and technical analysis. I use fundamental analysis to tell me kind of where to look at, you know, what are the attractive stocks and sectors. Mm-hmm. And then I use technical analysis to tell me kind of when to get in. And I also use technical analysis to tell me if I'm wrong and have to admit that I'm wrong and cut my losses and move on.
Okay. Now, the S&P chart, and it's the daily chart, you point out that it's what's called a rising wedge formation. So we're at record highs, but things are moving up, but they're tightening at the same time. Is that right?
Correct. And I think kind of to take things in context, I think we are in the seventh year of this bull market. And I think by historical standards, That's pretty old. Most bull markets are 3 to 5 years, and we can all talk about, you know, why this bull market is kind of so old and it's been so big. Mm-hmm. But that's where we are. And right now, the pattern that you described, the rising wedge pattern, is basically a pattern that says the market is kind of slowly but surely losing momentum. And then that typically ends, if this actual pattern confirms, that typically ends at some kind of a top. And then the market kind of can pull back between 15-20%.
Because the prices are moving higher, right? They're moving higher, then they come down. They move even higher and come down a little bit less, right? So things are...
Correct.
Why does that lead to a breakdown, that kind of a pattern?
Well, I think that kind of a pattern signifies that kind of there's distribution going on under the surface, meaning, you know, there's a lot more kind of money kind of under the surface leaving the market and new money coming in. Mm-hmm. So what you get is this kind of arc. If you imagine if you throw a ball in the air and kind of you watch kind of gravity takes its toll on it, the ascent kind of starts to slow down before mm-hmm. it ultimately kind of tops and starts turning the other way. So now we're in that phase where we're kind of the ball is kind of has a hard time kind of gathering up momentum to keep moving higher. And it's kind of slowing down, and it's at a risk of kind of turning the other way.
Okay, now today we saw a drop. Did we break that that resistance line today? Or
correct, today was potentially significant because the market kind of several kind of technical things came together. I think you were talking about the rising wedge, and today the market kind of definitively broke down from that wedge, and broke down kind of several other kind of technical levels that technical traders look at. Mm-hmm. So this would indeed portend a start of some kind of correction. And I say could, because none of these things are guaranteed. And we have to wait for another kind of couple of days to a couple of weeks to really see what prices are trying to tell us here.
Right. I mean, go back, to March? It probably looked like it might have been ready to do that in March too, right?
Correct. Okay. I think that the market's kind of come down against this kind of a lower trend line and been able to bounce, but each subsequent bounce has been kind of shallower and shallower, uh-huh. and now we're seeing it kind of completely fail to hold the trend line, and now we have to see where the prices go from here.
Okay, now the S&P, it's a 2085 today, right? That's the close?
Correct.
Now, you say that if we're talking about a real downside target, you're talking about 1820. I mean,
correct.
That's why so far down? What's happening down there at 1820?
Well, I think it's simply kind of how technicians kind of measure these patterns. So I think when it comes to the rising wedges, you kind of measure the size of the initial move, which was about 260, 270 points.
Right.
And if you project that to 2080 or 2085 or from now, you kind of subtract, and that's how you get 1820.
Right, 1820, that was back in October 1820,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
So that would be, would that be a bit of a painful drop to get down there?
It would be, and I think it would be very painful, especially for people who are kind of overexposed in the market or buy and hold, and people who are not kind of used to dealing with the risk and how to manage risk on the downside.
I mean, it came down to 1820, but then came right back up over 2,000 within a month.
Correct.
Or a month and a half. So Would you feel comfortable at that level that we'd potentially see the same kind of thing, or would this be a different type of downturn?
Well, given where we are in the bull market, given kind of these are the later stages, I would say if we really came down to 1820, you know, I would be reluctant at that point to declare that you know that's it, and you know now we have kind of clear sailing ahead of us. So at that time, it was very big kind of a situational and kind of see what's going on kind of beyond the stock market and the global economy.
Well, one last thing, Drosko. So you're more of a long-term trader, right? Trade for weeks and months even?
Correct.
So have you taken positions then recently with these record highs we've had?
The positions I've taken are always a kind of combination of longs and shorts. And just recently I've been kind of leaning on more on the short side for two reasons. One is to kind of hedge and protect the portfolio, and because, you know, if you take a short position, you kind of offset your long exposure, and therefore you protect yourself.
Right.
And I've also been looking at sectors that have really kind of fundamentally overheated, like the biotechs, and they're taking short positions in those.
On particular stocks in there, you're saying?
The
sector you're saying as a whole?
The biotech sector, I mean, you can kind of go after the ETFs that are kind of sector ETFs like IBB, and those are particularly vulnerable because, you know, they were technically extended and kind of fundamentally valuations in the biotech space have been really really out of the norm, if you will.
Yeah, I mean,
and then if you're looking at sectors where the money's flowing right now, I think it's flowing into the kind of the sectors that have been beaten down as of late, if you will, and energy is the best example.
Yeah, I mean, well, record highs, what, 2120 on the S&P, and then over 5,000 there, and the NASDAQ for a bit. Is this the time to be nervous, to be ready to look down?
Well, it's all going to come down to what's happening in the economy. I think if the economy kind of picks up in the second quarter after the dismal first quarter we've had,
right,
then the market could, this could turn out to be just a temporary correction. The market can kind of continue on its merry way. But if the economy deteriorates and is unable to get out of this funk, then that completely changes the picture as to what's going to happen with the stock market.
It's Drosko Covarlia. He's a former hedge fund manager, current trader, portfolio manager. Check his writings out at seeitmarket.com, seeitmarket.com. You're also the NoahNet trader blog. You have that?
Correct.
Okay. This is what, NoahNet.com?
NoahNetTrader.com.
NoahNetTrader.com. Drosko, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.